So Madhav Maharaj gave us a very erudite presentation, quoting from many sources and also explaining the importance of the Valmiki Ramayana as the source of information about Lord Ram. And in this way, establishing that it is important that we approach the narrations about the Supreme Lord from a bona fide source, like Valmiki Ramayana, and not, for example, Amarchita Katha or something like that. Although it's also nice, I admit, I sometimes glance at it myself. But whatever is there in the Amarchita Katha really has to be filtered, because it may be full of misconceptions and so on. Today we are approaching the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra through Srimad Bhagavatam. Because that is not just out of habit, but rather it is because we are approaching Lord Ramachandra through Lord Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam particularly is describing the unlimited glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satsidananda Vigraha. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, Dipachir eva hida santram abhyupecha dipayate vivrittahinu samana dharma yastadrik eva hicha vishnu tayor vibhate govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. How from one dipa, from one light, so many other lights are being lit. So Krishna being the original light, and then from Krishna, so many other lights are lit. So ultimately, we understand that Lord Ramachandra is the expansion of Lord Krishna. And thus, on this day, we are reading here from Srimad Bhagavatam, because Bhagavatam specifically is dedicated to describing the Lord in all His glories, in His manifestations, in His energies, and so on. Srimad Bhagavatam in the ninth canto gives us a short summary of the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, but deals with some of the essential key elements in the narration. I'll also read a verse. I'll continue from here with, I guess, verse 6 and 7. Yo loka vira samito danurai samugram sita svayam varagrihe trisata panitam adaya bala gajalilai vikshayastim sajikritam ripavikrishya bhavanjamaje jidvan rupa gunalila vayunga rupam stabha stabhidam sriyam urasyabhi labdhamanam marke vrajan brigupatir vyanayat parudam darpam mahim makritayastrir arajabijam. Translation. O King, the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra were wonderful, like those of a baby elephant. In the assembly where Mother Sita was to choose her husband in the midst of the heroes of this world, he broke the bow belonging to Lord Shiva. This bow was so heavy that it was carried by 300 men, but Lord Ramachandra bent and strung it and broke it in the middle, just as a baby elephant breaks a stick of sugar cane. Lord Ramachandra being compared to a baby elephant is not disrespectful, but rather referring to how he was very, very young at the time. still a boy, actually, still a boy, but yet so inconceivably powerful, so surprisingly powerful, when many, many strong men could not even lift that bow. It took 300 strong men, and here comes a boy to contrast the situation, and he just effortlessly strings it. But that's not all. The bow that was impossible to string, he strung, and then took it a step further, pulled it back, and just broke it. In this way, Lord Ramachandra showed how with great ease he could do such a thing. Just as Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill with great ease on the little finger of his left hand, not anywhere, left hand and little finger, like that. So the Lord shows that really these supernatural feats are not so great for him. He is just showing only a spark of his splendor in this way. He gives a little impression of his opulence, but actually the power of the Supreme Lord is so much greater. What is a tiny little bow for the Lord is totally insignificant, and if you think about it. So these feats are not great, if you think of it in that way, for the Supreme Lord to perform. Therefore, like a baby elephant showing his prowess. Thus the Lord achieved the hand of Mother Sita, who was equally as endowed with transcendental qualities of form, beauty, behavior, age, and nature. Indeed, she was the goddess of fortune who constantly rests on the chest of the Lord. While returning from Sita's home, after gaining her at the assembly of competitors, Lord Ramachandra met Parasaram. Although Parasaram was very proud, having rid the earth of the royal aura 21 times, he was defeated by the Lord, who appeared to be a kshatriya of the royal order. So Sita Devi, being the perfect match for the Supreme Lord, she was Sri, the goddess of fortune, and it is said equally endowed, Anurupa Guna, Shila, Vaya, Anga, Rupam. She had all the right attributes. She was of the right age. She had the right beauty, the right qualities, the right behavior. Everything was just befitting the position of Lord Ramachandra. We, on the contrary, are suffering the reactions from our sinful activities, and as such are never endowed with all the perfect attributes. Rather, we have to go through a lifetime of frustration about not having the right attributes. Right? Because we are conditioned souls. But Sita Devi, being Lakshmi Devi herself, was by no means limited by the material energy, as we are. Therefore, not for a moment can one consider any of the actions of Sita to be the actions of an ordinary person. Then, of course, we remember how Sita and Ram were banned to the forest. Yesterday we also spoke about this point. And what strikes me as a very outstanding feature when Ram is banned to the forest is how he takes it so transcendental. When his father is almost dying, when the whole kingdom is crying, when everyone is completely destroyed, that Ram is banned to the forest. on the day before the coronation, just because his father keeps his word. Why does he keep his word anyway? Right? Why keep your word if it is useless? If it is not beneficial? Why send Ram away? Why not keep Ram? Why not keep Ram if Ram was Dharma personified? And just to in the Ramayana it is described that Dasarat was describing this woman, this sinful woman, this degraded woman, and such kind of thoughts he had about her. So why would he keep his word to some sinful person? What would we do if some very sinful person comes and says, "You promised to me once long ago that you would give me whatever I want. Now you must give." And then he'll say, to stay a little bit in tune with the manner of having to turn over the cows, right, to me. I want all the cows. You say, "We're not giving you the cows, right? Gave you my word or not, I'm not giving, right? We would not give to some sinful man the cows, even if he would have told him 10 years ago, well, yeah, whatever you want, you can have. Break our word like that for a higher cause. What's wrong with that? Why did Dasarath not break his word for the higher cause? Isn't real Dharma to just protect the greater interest? Wasn't it a greater interest to keep Ram and put Ram on the throne than to satisfy some sinful woman? Why? Yes, why? Aren't there such considerations? Wasn't it in the interest of the world? And then we see that in the Mahabharata, sometimes Krishna bends these rules of Dharma a little bit for the sake of a greater cause. So shouldn't Dasarath, shouldn't he have just ignored her? Banned her to the forest? Right? If I was Dasarath, I would have said, "Okay, and for all this, you're off to the forest now. That's it. Out, you know. And you can take your son Bharat with you, right? And he can look after you, right? Yeah, send Bharat and Kaikeyi to the forest, right? Many kings would have done." So why didn't Dasarath do that? Why? Was it that he was too dharmic? No, it wasn't that. Don't think that the thought didn't cross Dasarath's mind. Don't think. Don't think that he didn't consider. Because Ram was more dear to Dasarath than anyone. Therefore, there was no question whatsoever that Dasarath was just giving up Ram. He was giving up his life. He was thinking of any possible way not to do it and to keep Ram. But the answer to this question is really found in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Because in the Chaitanya Bhagavat there is a parallel situation where Harai Pandit is asked in charity for his son, right? And at that point, Harai Pandit is thinking, "Shall I give my son? No way. I will not give my son. I will just not do it, right? To hell with all Dharma, to hell with all religious principles. I will not give my son." And Dasarath thought it also. But then he was thinking, "But if I don't give my son, then what am I teaching him? Then how am I teaching him the principles of Dharma, which is my primary duty in my relationship with my son? And if I'm not doing that, then what is the point? What is the point? Then I'm not doing my service." And therefore Dasarath could not send that horrible woman to the forest. And therefore Dasarath was just bound, not by Dharma, but by his service. By his service to Lord Ramachandra. His service to give the Dharma, to give an example to Dharma, of Dharma to his son. That was Dasarath's predicament. He could not deviate from his service. Therefore, he did not object. Therefore, Ram was sent to the forest. And the whole world suffered. The whole world suffered because of it. But he had no other choice. He had no other option. Right? And then everyone is brokenhearted except Ram. He's like very cheerful. In the midst of like this kind of total disaster mood, right, where everyone is just freaking out, there is Ram and he is just totally happy and relaxed and just sort of saying, yeah, no problem. He's ready to go. And that also is something really, really extraordinary. Totally extraordinary how Lord Ramachandra is taking this unjust action, which is not favorable to the kingdom. But as Madhava Maharaj mentioned, he said many nice sages in the forest, he in this way saw it as favorable. And anyway, he was detached. He was detached. Completely detached. This detachment was just even more too much. Right? Those who were already feeling that the situation was too much, to see Ram's detachment, that made it even worse. That made it even worse. Let us carry on. We'll leave. We'll go past Nasik, and we will not enter into that pastime. We'll skip that and go straight to O King Pariksit. When Ravana, who had 10 heads on his shoulders, heard about the beautiful and attractive features of Sita, his mind was agitated by lusty desires, and he went to kidnap her. To distract Lord Ramachandra from his ashram, Ravana sent Maricha in the form of a golden deer, and when Lord Ramachandra saw that wonderful deer, he left his residence and followed it, and finally killed it with a sharp arrow, just as Lord Shiva killed Daksha. When Ramachandra entered the forest and Lakshman was also absent, the worst of the Rakshasas, Ravana kidnapped Sita Devi, the daughter of the king of Videha. Just as a tiger seizes unprotected sheep when the shepherd is absent. Then Lord Ramachandra wandered in the forest with his brother Lakshman, as if very much distressed due to separation from his wife. Thus he showed by his personal example the condition of a person attached to women. Srila Prabhupada in the purport says that, of course, this is the material. There is a material side to Sri Sanghi, but the situation of Lord Ramachandra is spiritual, for he does not belong to the material world. Narayana Paruvyaktat. Narayana is beyond the material creation. So yes, Lord Ramachandra's attachment was not the attachment of an ordinary henpecked husband. In one sense, we have to see that within the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, there are two levels. One level is that Lord Ramachandra is acting out the role of a husband in this world. And Lord Ramachandra is showing the example in this world. But the other side, which Srila Prabhupada then begins to highlight, is the spiritual relationship that exists between Sitaram. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the separation of Lord Ramachandra from Sita is spiritually understood as Vipralamba, which is an activity of the Ladini potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So yes, we are seeing that the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra are also displaying something of the nature of Vipralamba. Therefore, it is said that there is a whole list of incarnations of the Lord given in the Bhagavatam. And then such as Varaha, such as Lord Kalki, such as Lord Nrsimha, and so many others. But it is said of all these incarnations, Lord Ramachandra is almost Krishna. Almost. Because Prabhupada said, actually he is as good as Krishna. Virtually speaking, there is no difference between Ram and Krishna. The only difference is that when the Lord is manifesting his feature as Lord Ramachandra, he is not revealing his nature in full. Because as Lord Ramachandra, he adheres to the path of Dharma. He is particularly here to give the example. Whereas Krishna, he's showing the transcendental nature. Krishna, he is stealing. Krishna is playing his flute, and the wives of others are leaving home and run off into the forest. And Krishna is interacting with the gopis in the forest like this, which is transcendental to mundane morality. So one could say, to say it in a very short and paraphrased way, that Lord Ramachandra is showing the path and Krishna is showing the spiritual world. But still, Lord Ramachandra is also revealing something of the nature of the spiritual world. He's revealing the nature of Vipralamba, of separation. And how spiritual love exists in this way, in this Vipralamba Bhav, in this spirit of separation. And therefore, the separation of Sita that is being displayed by the Supreme Lord is truly the separation of the between the Supreme Lord and his devotee. It is that. It is not the husband and wife type of attachment, but it is the attachment that exists in pure bhakti. It is bhakti here, and the separation that experience is the separation that is experienced by the devotee from Krishna. Yes. So that is how I'm paraphrasing long purports here, but just to see that this is a very significant point, very significant. One might easily miss that if we are reading the pastimes of Ramayana without Srila Prabhupada's purports. We might not catch that element, the Vipralamba that exists between Sitaram. We continue. Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, has assumed the form of a human being. He assumed the form of a human being because Ravana had performed austerities and had received benedictions, and in these benedictions he was protected from death at the hands of all kinds of creatures. And he had listed demigods, he had listed rakshasas, and he had listed all kinds of superior beings in the universe, but humans, I mean, he had excluded humans from the list, because never ever did Ravana have a problem with the humans. rather he would have for breakfast. Right? So Ravana was not the least concerned with a human creature. Not at all. He even threatened Sita at one point, right, that if she would not surrender, that he would eat her. Right? We may recall. Yes. One question that could come to mind is why didn't Ravana simply take Sita by force? But he could not do, because Ravana had, besides benediction, also a few curses on his head. He had done it before, taken women by force, and he was cursed that if he would ever do that again, that he would die. So he had some respect for Brahminical curses, so he was a little careful about that. There were other curses upon him also. He laughed at Astavraka for his eight-bent form. Krishna has a three-bent form, but Astavraka has an eight-bent form. He is a great sage who somehow or other, his body is very crooked and he moves in a very awkward way. And from time to time, he becomes the cause of laughter or mockery. Because of that, he was cursed. He said that Astavraka looked like a monkey. And so he was cursed that the monkeys would become the cause of his downfall. So in this way, we see how somehow or other, all along, Ravana was deeply absorbed in his pride, convinced that every step of the way, he was perfectly in control. Ravana was thinking, I've got it all figured out, I've got it all under control here, and everything is going very, very well. But he could not see that invisibly everything was being arranged by the Supreme Lord, and that invisibly the Lord was getting everything ready to somehow or other march upon Lanka with an army of monkeys, right, which was somehow or other not calculated. Humans were not on the list of the benedictions, and monkeys also were not there. So in this way, the enemy that Ravana was facing was not the enemy that he had calculated when he thought that everything was under control, when he carefully calculated all the elements. So again, we also tend to calculate this tendency to calculate our position in the material energy is very strong in the conditioned soul. And one who begins to develop great faith in his calculations is bound to become a demon. But even in us, we see some of that. There was a letter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur who was describing about Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu. And he said, Prahlad, wherever he looked, he saw the Supreme Lord. Hiranyakasipu, wherever he looked, he could not see the Supreme Lord. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, and we are in between. So, in between Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu, in between Ravana and Ram somewhere, that's the situation. An interesting letter, very interesting, and an interesting meditation. So, the tendency when we read the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which describes the divine and demoniac nature, is the first seven verses deal with the divine nature, and then after that it goes into the demoniac nature. So the tendency is to think the first seven verses, that's about us, and the rest is about the neighbors. That tendency is very strong. But so when we are hearing about Sita Ram, and of course we are on Ram's side and everything, and Hanuman, and then we think, well, Ravana, yes, those are the demons, right? And we tend to see ourselves as devotees. But to see that a little bit a little Ravana lives in us is actually another way of looking at the pastime, which we might not so quickly do, but it is the fact of the matter, according to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's letter. So, considering that, that we must look at Ravana as if we are holding up a mirror to ourselves, is an interesting little detail. We are also calculating very carefully and think we've got it all figured out. We've got it all arranged. Credit card in the back pocket. Yes, let's go now and just on an adventure tour. No problem. Just pull it out whenever we need. Insurance built in and everything materially taken care. In this way, the materialistic tendency to bank on our own strengths instead of on the mercy of the Lord is also present within us. The time is moving along and the pastimes of the Lord are unlimited. So we have simply sampled a little to get some taste. 2 minutes for the one question that might be there if somebody is quick on the draw. Or if not, we Swamis, we can easily fill 2 minutes. There is no problem. Give a Swami a minute and he'll take two. Right. That is not a problem. So, in conclusion, we are understanding that Lord Ramachandra is almost Krishna. Lord Ramachandra, as Patitapavan, is giving the mercy even to the monkeys, who are not so qualified, but yet he gives. Still, it is said Krishna is more merciful than Lord Ramachandra, because Lord Ramachandra appears in royalty and remains distant from the people. But Krishna, as a cowherd boy, is intimately mixing with the residents of Vrindavan, therefore more merciful. And still, Lord Chaitanya is still more merciful because where Krishna asked for surrender in the Gita, Lord Chaitanya even gives these the benedictions of Krishna consciousness even when we're not asking for it, even when we're not surrendering. Somehow or other, he gives very liberally. So, we are today certainly praying for the mercy of Lord Ramachandra. We hope to do some special service to Lord Ramachandra because the day is surcharged with special mercy. If somehow or other we can dedicate our life to serving the Lord in all his different manifestations, and we pray to all, then we are most blessed. Still, we understand that we can only approach the mercy of Lord Ramachandra through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, because without Lord Chaitanya, we are more fallen than monkeys. Satsarupa Maharaj stated like this. This is actually Satsarupa Maharaj. He said that Ram, he had an army of monkeys to go to Lanka, and Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the Lower East Side. Yes. So, you know, what to do. These monkeys, they were stealing a few fruits and so on, but the hippies from the Lower East Side, they were doing other things. So, in this way, more fallen than the monkeys, we need the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to approach Lord Ramachandra. But even approaching Lord Chaitanya is not easy for us, and therefore we depend on Srila Prabhupada. And to be here today in the Bhaktivedanta manner, which is so much Srila Prabhupada's headquarters in Europe is to celebrate Lord Ramachandra. We are approaching the Lord through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, and therefore we looked at the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra through the purports and translations of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Lord Ramachandra Bhagavan ki jai. Sri Ram Nomi Maha Mahotsava ki jai.